work and everything. Beautiful.
Stratford Road.
Thank you, Stratford
How
Road.
How lovely.
Thank you, Stratford Road.
Stratford Road.
Our new favorite.
That is
PTA.
Nice.
Okay. Oh, I don't see the high school kid.
High school's here. Oh, but our middle school representative is here. The middle school.
Here he is.
I don't remember.
This is the last one of the year, right?
Yes. So,
Welcome, everyone, to the last Board of Ed meeting of the calendar year, not the school year. As we did last time, I'm going to start with the same little preamble. We ask that everyone at the meetings be respectful and kind to everyone who's here. Remember that the people sitting in the audience is somebody's child, spouse, parent, what have you. We need to treat each other. We can disagree, but we need to do it respectfully and with kindness. So with that, the high school representative, come on down.
Now it is. Is it? It is. Okay. All right, so we have some grade reports to shake things up a bit. The senior class finally voted on their senior superlatives. They're getting their senior shirts, so all the shirt sizes are done. POB Idol is on the 22nd. There is a meeting, I wrote on Monday, but it's today, and it already happened. So, and it's the 22nd of January, in case you all forgot. Juniors, my class finally booked their location for prom. It is at the Floral Terrace. We are selling lanyards and quarter zips. Sophomores, Gesundheit, are selling long sleeve shirts, and there will be a hot chocolate sale on Wednesday, before first period. I have to remember to bring money. Freshmen had their first pizza sale, and they're planning their second pizza sale. They are selling sweatshirts, t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, and just a lot of shirts. Further on the calendar, our MetMonk had its their meeting with 15 schools, and even a school from the Dominican Republic, so that's impressive, right? The senior citizen tea was on last Friday. Yes, see? Someone pays attention to me. There were about 100 senior citizens, and the a cappella groups performed for them. There was a jazz and orchestra concert yesterday, I believe. And thank you. Thank you. Friday was the Decca Dingo, which was a huge success. Tomorrow is the choir concert, and we are looking forward to a nice break.
Have a very healthy, happy new year.
You too. Thank you.
Good evening. The Sounds of Music were heard throughout the month as Matlin Orchestra, Band, and Chorus performed their first concerts of the year. Congratulations to the students and teachers for all their hard work. Matlin's peer tutoring program is up and running. 7th and 8th grade students volunteer their time to work with students on homework, study tips, and organizational skills. They not only serve as tutors, but as role models as well. Each month, Matlin staff members are catching students who are demonstrating their pride. This award recognizes students for doing their personal best, showing respect, controlling their impulses, making good decisions, and demonstrating empathy. We are thankful for positive contributions that these students have made to our school community. Matlin Service Club held its first hot chocolate sale and successfully raised enough money to benefit two local animal shelters. At POB, we are fresh off the excitement from our winter concerts. The band and orchestra groups, chorus, and jazz band performances demonstrated the wonderful talents we have at POBMS and all of the hard work our students and teachers have put in this year. It was a great way to bring the school community together and get into the spirit of the holidays. Speaking of holiday spirit, our 8th graders, led by Mrs. Oak and the Stand Up to Stand Out Club, have been very busy getting our candygrams ready. 8th graders can send a kind candygram to another 8th grader by picking a name at random. All those who are interested in participating receive their candygram and warm holiday message on Friday, December 18th, spreading even more holiday joy and sweets. Throughout the month of December, our MAP groups have been participating in the paper plate activity, again spreading kindness and positive thoughts to others. Each student was given a paper plate and wrote their name in the middle. The plates were then passed around to the other group members, with each member writing something kind about the person whose name was on the plate. Students and teachers were able to receive a plateful of positive messages to start their day. Our POBMS newspaper Fall Winter Edition was unveiled this month by Ms. Gentile and the Newspaper Club. Each map received a QR code and a link. Received a QR code and a link that brought them to the online version of the newspaper. This issue can be read any place, any time, on any smartphone, computer, or tablet. On Monday, December 14th, our 7th and 8th grade French students took part in the Boucher de Noël Yule Log Cake Competition. Students were evaluated based on their presentation, taste, and design of this traditional French treat. There were barely any bites left at the end of the competition, with some truly delicious cakes being presented. POBMS also celebrated two festive Friday Eves, with a call for all staff and students to wear their most spirited holiday gear. The more decorated, the better. There are even sweaters with lights attached. Finally, as we look forward to the new year, we are introducing a brand new MAP idea, Dance with the Teachers. Interested MAP groups will work on creating a dance with their MAP teachers to show at an extended MAP in January. We look forward to seeing some creativity and great moves. POBMS wishes you all a happy holiday and wonderful new year and goodwill to all.
Announcements.
I neglected to mention this, to say this last time, but I wanted to thank SNAP, the Special Needs Autism Program Foundation, for its donations of toys, computer games, and so on. I also, in my occasional spot, you know, alumni in the news, I was looking through the New York Times the other day and noticed that Jeffrey Beagle, who was somebody that I went to high school with, who subsequently went on to Juilliard and became a concert pianist, has commissioned a work by Peter Shikala under his alter ego, PDQ Bach, who's the only deceased composer still taking commissions. So he commissioned a piano concerto for very grand piano. So it's good to see that he's very much maintained his life in music. And let me see. Yes, I'd wanted to mention the UN Club Conference, but Mr. Goldsmith beat me to it. That's it.
Some of us had the pleasure of attending the high school concert. It was just unbelievable. The strings, the full string ensemble, the jazz quartet, I mean, it was just something that really could have been on any Broadway stage. The professionalism, they played Frozen, which just, you could have heard a pin drop. And Mr. Rubin said that he had two sax players who hit the highest notes ever for high school students, and it was just phenomenal. This is what we're all about. It's just not about the academics. It's about the art that you look around. It's about music. It's about kids having the right to express themselves in so many different ways. And when you see the God-given gifts that these kids have, it's not easy. I mean, I can't carry a tune. I've never played an instrument, so I just sit there and watch in amazement as you see the music come to life in each of our children or the artwork. And I just want to applaud our school district and our staff, because this is something a lot of school districts don't do. They don't nurture those arts and everything else. Debbie and I attended the Senior Citizen Tea. They thought we were part of the club, and it was very, very nice. I had the opportunity a week ago to spend the day in Syosset High School with their junior class. And they take their health classes and break them up into four separate days. And it's a challenge day. It was taken from a program, a national program, in which children cross a line. And what it is, it's building character. And all morning we sat and worked in different workshops and amongst ourselves in what they called a family. And we got to know each other. We got to talk about things. The two teachers, the health teachers, the coordinators, shared some very personal stories of their lives and how it changed it. Most of them had to do with family relationships. And in the latter part of the afternoon, everybody was in the gym, and we all stood on one side of the gym. And then there's the usual line that's in the gym, and they called it the yellow line. And what happened was they asked a question like, anybody who practices Judaism, please cross the line. And you cross the line, and then you turn around, and the people encourage you to come back and show the respect and warmth for each and every one. And as the questions went on, there was some, did you say good morning to anyone, to a certain person? They did not say good morning back. Did you say good morning to a teacher and not get any response? And then it was vice versa. Did a teacher say good morning to you and you ignored it? And then the question started to come about how many students had ever run away from home. How many students had thoughts of suicide? How many students are addicted to or have been addicted to drugs and alcohol? And when you saw the amounts of students on those three things crossing the line, how many students felt because they were gay, how they were being treated by other people? How many children just came out being gay or transgender? How does their lives feel? I cannot tell you the emotion that started to fill that room as we went back to our family after that. Students started to come forth about things that are really going on in their lives, and the sobbing and the hugging of each other, and sending a note to different people in the room, thanking them for things that they had done over the years in school that you never said thank you to. Acknowledging that people exist that are your classmates that you spent 3 years with and you didn't even say hello or know who they were in your health class. And after the students left, we all sat together with the guidance counselors, the crisis counselors, and the social workers to talk about the students on our list that we thought we're in serious danger of something happening. We sort of rated our concerns about them. And I know it's a lot of work. I know it's something that doesn't happen overnight. But it's certainly something I'd like to see our high school, some of the people go next year and participate in it. Because you can adapt it any way you want. But we have problems with kids with drugs and alcohol. And we have a lot of problems with kids who think about suicide because of their sexual orientation. And we have a lot of kids, because they may be, and I can't speak for our district or for their district, who are Muslim. And when three Muslim children crossed the line, and one was basically dressed in Muslim garb, and how the kids hugged her when she came back and supported her and let her know that this is a place where she belongs to live, that's what this is all about. It was just, I want to thank Lauren because she had a connection. And it was just something that just I'll never forget. And thank you for that.
Well, thank you for attending, and I'm sorry I couldn't. It sounds very powerful. Not to bring everything down, but because it's a happy, happy time. But I went to the Danger Zone, Keeping Our Kids Safe After School, the Long Island Safety Coalition at Hofstra University last Friday. Acting District Attorney Madeline Singer now runs this coalition that was founded by District Attorney Kathleen Rice. And it encourages our schools, young agencies, and all who work with youth 25 and under to work together to help youth survive the dangers of our times. There was an array of talented presenters and workshops. So the keynote was a 19-year-old Nickelodeon Disney star named Meredith O'Connor, who grew up on Long Island and had a rough time in school. So I never saw her before, but she has long, long legs, beautiful, and she was bullied. She grew up in Cold Spring Harbor. She said she felt very alone. She started to believe all the negative things that people told her about herself were true. She used her experience as a child to relate to the kids and what she went through. She said she had the most amazing family, but she didn't confide in them because she felt so ashamed. She wrote a lot of songs that children can now relate to about her feelings of being bullied, and she visits school districts and talks to children. So she sang a few of her songs to us, but her highlight for me was when she sang a duet with a boy named Michael. Michael is a boy with autism who has a voice of an angel, as far as I'm concerned, and I think everybody who gave him a standing ovation. Michael's from a group called Life's Work, which is a non-for-profit organization whose mission is to increase the quality of life of a person with disabilities or barriers through productive employment opportunities. That was my highlight. But now, I took three workshops. First was on Project Safe. A trial attorney who ran it spoke mostly on the then and now of child pornography and child predators with access to the internet. He spoke about how having internet access and encrypted browsers is a benefit as well as a problem. It's easier for the bad guys, however, it makes it easier to catch them now. Images load much more quickly these days. Photographs have gotten much more sadistic, and children are younger. Agents are finding it's the same offenders, they're just getting bored, and they now have a camera in their pocket, so it's just a little too easy. 10 to 12 years ago, investigators used to pretend they were kids and be able to email in chat rooms, and now with video chat, they cannot do that anymore. District Attorney Bode wanted to strongly emphasize that all apps such as Kick, Snapchat, Instagram, Capture, Pictures, and none of these are safe. If you want to take a picture, take a second guess as to whether you should take it. If you are thinking about taking it, don't. Most, if not all, children's sex offenders online are more dangerous than even the hands-on sex offenders. It's been proven that most, if not all, online sex offenders have had a hands-on offense before. My second session I went to was called Bridget. I'd like to compare this to another app at another board meeting because I know we have a lot to go through tonight that I feel might be useful for the same at another time. In a nutshell, it's a program, but it's not an app as of yet that partners with schools to address bullying and harassment with comprehensive and compliant solutions that cultivate a safe and positive environment. The third session was with Karen Torres, the voice of distracting driving. This was about texting awareness while driving. Car crashes are the number one killer of teens between 16 and 20 years old. It surpasses drinking and driving now. And yes, adults are just as guilty, so practice what you preach. 90% of adults that text and drive know it's dangerous, but they choose to do it anyway. There are apps, by the way, that know if you're driving in the car, so they will automatically turn off your phone. Unfortunately, I didn't get those apps, but I'll Google them and find out what they are, but not while I'm driving. Lastly, I went to Not My Child, and that was about addiction. And everybody who attended all the workshops actually had to attend this. So no addict aspires to become an addict, obviously, one would think. Opiates are the strongest drugs out there. Attorney Faxis, who gave the presentation, explained that the county is suffering from a heroin problem of epidemic proportions. She explained to parents and educators that no child is immune from this growth problem and that it's difficult to spot in its early stages, that every community can suffer from its efforts, and that we all need to partner up and to tackle this deadly issue. It's a powerful presentation that she talks about. And she said that it starts with kids going through parents' cabinets. She speaks that in 2015 so far, we have about 57 deaths in Nassau County due to heroin. Most drug overdoses she also states, happen between Christmas and New Year's. She speaks about the heroin of today being different than the heroin of the 70s and 80s. I thought this was really interesting. It was linked to intravenous drugs. People got scared and nervous when they realized that this led to AIDS. But now it's retooled. You could snort it, you could smoke it, and it's marked to purchase. The marketing is really interesting. They made it fun. They made it into hip stamps with labels on it, so there's Star Wars now out there and things to get children to want to purchase it. So just be on top of your child, know who their friends are, check their social media account, just know who they're hanging out with. And since we have discussion on Narcan has saved over 400 people in Nassau County. So the district attorney just mentioned she had two programs. I know we have a great prom program. Ginger had mentioned to me, I wasn't aware of, but now I am. So she does a pre-prom program and mentioned that if there are any other programs, since there were a ton of schools there, that they would bring some programs to the district if any PTAs or the schools needed. But very enlightening.
Last week, I also had the opportunity to attend the Pasadena Choral Concert, and it was amazing. It was 10:45 in the morning. There wasn't a seat open in the house, which meant that most of these parents and many of the grandparents that were there took at least the morning off of work to see their child perform. And it was great. The kids were so proud of themselves. The teacher did an amazing job. And so I just want to congratulate them, the students and the staff, for a really great concert. You see how much work goes into these concerts. And I also just wanted to mention that this weekend, we don't often have our kids highlighted in terms of athletics. So I just wanted to mention that wrestler Peter Pappas in our high school, who's gone to the state finals the last 2 years, will be hopefully once again going. And there was a very nice article that featured three very talented wrestlers, and he was one of them. And then a gymnast, Miranda Lund, was also featured in Newsday, speaking about her talent as well as I'm thinking she must have some kind of injury because she was wearing a robot-looking brace, they mentioned. And I wanted to congratulate her for all of her hard work as well as all of our other gymnasts. But it was wonderful to see. When I came downstairs yesterday morning, my husband said, "You have two kids in the paper today." So it was very nice to see. So congratulations to them all and to their families and their teachers and coaches.
Yeah, I also, the same morning, otherwise I would have tried to hit both of them. Stratford Road also had its winter concert, and that was a lovely concert. What I was particularly impressed by was that there was this kind of narrative through line through the concert, and also the staff really worked to make sure as many kids were included as possible. There were a lot of speakers going, introducing the various songs and giving us information, and the artwork. I think there were something like five different covers, really nice covers. You know, these are fourth graders, and they were really lovely covers. And just in terms of sort of educational, you know, in media, being discussed in media, I've been reading The Prize, Who's in Charge of America's Schools, which, you know, I haven't had a hate read like this since, I won't even say which politician it was that I was enjoying reading about. But it's a really interesting kind of horrifying look at what happens when you take $100 million and just sort of impose you know, sort of force this onto the Newark schools. And coincidentally, today I was looking at through the New York Times, and there was an article about a superintendent in Jennings, Missouri, and what she's managed to accomplish with, say, $80,000 in funding. She built a home for homeless students in her school district and is making sure that they get meals and is helping them get after-school jobs if that's going to help their families. And I was thinking, wow, what if, you know, there were a $100 million gift to do something productive like that in terms of wraparound services instead of some of what's been, you know, the shenanigans that have gone on in Newark. So anyway, well worth looking at.
I don't know if we mentioned this last meeting or not, but on the theme of athletics, our football team was named the number one scholar athlete team in the state. So kudos to that. If we mentioned it last time, well, I mentioned it again. There we go. It's so good we mentioned it twice. At the last meeting and in a lot of emails we've been receiving, we were talking about the request to expand the busing at the high school to include areas that are not now covered. I just want to update the community that we are listening to that and that it's not a simple thing to do. We've learned that we can't change any bus routes, we can't change the mileage without voter approval, so that would push anything into the next budget or beyond that. But we are looking into what the costs are and what it would be, and it will be factored into our future budget considerations if it's possible. But we even looking at that, there's nothing we can really do about it for this winter. And just want to let the community know we are looking into it. And now we have superintendent's announcements. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be back. It really is. I missed it. I missed the flow of things, although I did stay in touch, and I want to thank the central office and all of the administrators for keeping things going seamlessly. At least I thought it. That's what it seemed like. I know you worked very hard, but thank you so much. So while I was away, a lot happened on the state level that perhaps will have long-term effects on the way we function. The governor thought to convene a Common Core task force to discuss the issues around what is perceived as a problem with the Common Core. Did not convene the committee to discuss APPR, which is really the issue, but he convened the Common Core Task Force. This task force met a few times, and a few days later, there was a 56-page report that was written. And that 56-page report had some wonderful things in it, things that we've been talking about. It had 21 recommendations. We like to say the 20 plus one recommendation, because the first 20 seems to make sense. Well, actually, all of them do make sense, but really, the last one is the one that is really going to have some profound changes. So I've provided the board with the actual summary, which was on Engage New York. I actually, now thinking about it, think we should have that up on our website so that the public can see that. So the first recommendation is an acknowledgement that we need to have high quality standards and that these standards should be created through an open and transparent process with educators providing input. Absolutely agree. We also, on the survey that was put out, many educators spoke about the inappropriate, some of the developments of the inappropriate tasks that are embedded in Common Core for K through 2. And so the task force said, let's modify those early grades so that they are more age appropriate. Again, you need a task force to know that, because teachers were absolutely advocating for that and articulating that. The third recommendation is to have some flexibilities, and this really flows from the new ESSA, which is Every Student Success Act, which is the daughter or son of NCLB.
the reauthorization of ESEA, and that says that within and this is federal guidelines, that we need to build in some flexibilities for our students with disabilities and for our students who are English language learners, the ELLs. Well, they're now called ENLs. We also, the recommendation, and this came from educators, that what has been happening in New York State is that everyone's teaching to the test, and so it's narrowing the curriculum. So that was a recommendation that we ensure that the standards do not lead to the narrowing of the curriculum. And people spoke about the joy that has left the classroom, and specifically because the swing to nonfiction and some of the reading and the close reading has really taken away some of the love of learning. And so that recommendation came from practitioners who said, we really need to look at some of what we're asking people to do. We've focused so much on ELA and math, and we've lost all the other areas. So that recommendation, again, makes sense. The recommendation 5, establish a transparent and open process for reviewing the standards, having educators involved, and to build in some flexibility with the curriculum. Engage New York has a lot of material, but it's very difficult to navigate. So recommendation 7 really spoke to clean up Engage New York. Make sure that there are ample sample curriculum available so that and easily accessible. So that these are all, as I said, very, very important common sense recommendations. Launch a digital platform that enables teachers, including pre-service teachers, to share resources with other teachers across the state. That was the attempt for Engage New York. They want that to be expanded. That also makes sense, and particularly to include pre-service teachers. And providing professional development for teachers and educators. And some of that will require the governor to put his money where his mouth is. That is, you can't just say, let's do this, unless you're going to fund professional development. So we're hoping that there's some money that's associated with that professional development. And so that was recommendation 9. Recommendation 10 involved parents and other educators in creating a periodic review of the standards. Again, you see a theme, input of parents, input of educators, something that the previous administration they brought in fellows, and who funded those fellows? The Gates money, the corporate money funded that. So there was no input of educators, and when we spoke to them and said, this does not make sense, it doesn't translate in the classroom, they didn't hear us. So if these recommendations are followed, the input of parents and input of educators in the new, whatever is new, that will be a welcome. Gather student feedback on the quality of the new assessments when they do come. That would be a good thing. Provide ongoing transparency to parents and educators and local districts on the quality and content of all tests. Reduce the number of days and shorten the duration of the standardized tests. We talked to them about, in fact, in the report, which is really, it's a 56-page report, but it's really worth reading. They spoke about the tests being actually longer than the SATs. A third-grade test had 100 minutes more than the SATs, so which we've been saying all along. Shorten the tests, make them 1 hour, no more than an hour. That's what we're saying. In fact, the superintendents have been advocating for an adaptive test similar to what the NWEA does, similar to what many of the national tests are moving towards. An adaptive test, very short, computerized, and able to give you very detailed information right after the test. Provide support for teachers, undergo a formal review to determine whether a transition to on-time tests. This one I'm not so sure. This one I think the commissioner had something to do with this, because she keeps talking about an on-time test for existing New York State tests. You know, I'm not in favor of that, an on-time test. I think just in terms of our capacity to support that, within our schools. Just think about what does that look like for an IEP when you say double time if it's on timed. So I'm not sure that a practitioner would support that. Provide flexibilities for students with disabilities. Protect and enforce testing accommodation for students with disabilities. All common sense. Explore alternative options to assess the most severely disabled students. Right now, we have very severely disabled students being forced to take the 3-8 assessment. Totally inappropriate for them. And I think the commissioner definitely is, I can see her hand in this, because this is something, when we met over the summer, she really was in favor of. And we've been saying that since the testing started. Prevent students from being mandated into academic intervention. That is, one single test does not determine academic intervention services. By the way, our academic intervention service plan does not require a child to be identified for AIS just based on that one single factor. So I think POB has it right. There are other factors that would provide the profile for AIS. Eliminate double testing for English language learners. Absolutely true. Children who are just new to the country, they've just landed here, they have to take the NISA slap, and then they also have to take the 3-8 tests when they're not proficient in the language. So that, as I said, the first 20 recommendations all make sense, most of them anyway, except for the on-time test for me. And then, after the task force was finished, they added 21. And 21 really came from a lot of people saying, wait a minute, you have these tests that are not really valid that are now going to be used to evaluate teachers. Get that right. Make the system that generates a teacher growth score, make it make sense before you start using those scores to evaluate teachers. So recommendation 21 says, and I'm going to read it, exactly as it is. Until the new system is phased in, the results from assessments aligned to the current Common Core standards, as well as the updated standards, shall only be advisory and not be used to evaluate the performance of teachers or students. So it sounds great by the delinking of an invalid score, teacher growth scores, with teacher performance as in the APPR process, and students. It sounds great, but for me, it's problematic. It's problematic that we've had a system all our lives where children take assessments and you give feedback on the assessments. You give grades on the assessment. Well, grades are evaluations on an assessment. And if you have a Regents exam, those Regents exams are used as a grade. And those grades are entered into a student's final grade. This assessment, this 21, if you read it as is written in the regulations, you can no longer use the Regents exams to evaluate students or teachers. That's what 21 says. I don't think that's what they intended, but that's how it's going. It's playing out. So Regents exams, 3-8 exams, those assessments can only be used as advisory, not in evaluation of students or teachers. So that's something that the commissioner has to really play out. It's an unintended consequence that they need to now visit if that recommendation comes into play. So, you know, 20 years ago, we looked at the exams. Before APPR, before all this nonsense of 3012C and 3012D, we used student performance to say, how are you doing? Where are the gaps in learning? Then 3012C and 3012D, the new law on APPR, really changed a lot of things. I don't know where we're going with that recommendation 21, but this morning I had the opportunity to meet with the governor's office. All the superintendents in Nassau County met with the Secretary of State, sort of the Arne Duncan of Governor Cuomo, Jerry Hochman. I know, but people know who the Secretary of State for Education is. We have a new one. He's Jerry Hochman, who was a superintendent, and I worked with him on the APPR task force. I think there's hope when the governor selects someone who I truly believe understands the dilemma. And we were talking about some of the new regulations because the Board of Regents met last week to put in some emergency regulations. Their interpretation of the 21 recommendations is going to be very problematic because basically they have put a reliance. They've said you cannot use the 3 through 8 assessments, yes, for the APPR score. But they've put a reliance on SLOs, which are the locally developed assessments, and they've now made the worst idea in education, I consider that to be one of the worst ideas in education, SLOs. They are now the law of the land. They are now the way that we will be finding the student component portion of the APPR. And if we move to the new law, which is 3012D, which we're required to do, those assessments have to be state-approved assessments. So it means that many of us will be looking at buying tests, looking for some artificial tests, or if we stay with 3012C, we're looking at taking our instructional assessments that we've used to give us information about how children are doing, and those will now become the student component for APPR. Where does that leave us with parents who do not wish to have their children participate in a process that links student scores with teacher evaluation? I'm not sure where we're going. Because something that was good for us, some of the instructive assessments that we used for indicating our benchmarks for learning have now become a dirty word with this new process. And we've articulated that. The other issue with the new regs that the commissioner has come up with last Friday is that during this process where we're not going to be using the 3 through 8 assessments, there still will be teacher growth scores issued by the State Department that can be made public. So here the recommendation is, and we all acknowledge that it's a flawed system, but her new regs says it's a flawed system, but we still will have the old system of giving the score, the composite score, and it can be made public. And if a parent requests the information, it will be available. So I was interviewed last Friday by Newsday, and I said, this is still a gotcha system. Because as long as you have the two scores, and both can be public, we still are in a gotcha mode. And I asked the commissioner on Friday, why do you need it? Why do you need both scores? Why do you need the old score and the transition score? I didn't get a very good answer. So I think that we have to begin to look at partnering with the administrators, partnering with our teachers, NICET, and the administrative units, to come up with something that makes sense for our children. Because right now, what we have are regs that really will not address the opt-out movement. In fact, I think it's going to explode the opt-out movement because I can tell you that the SLOs are going to increase the amount of testing that we do. That's the result. The amount of testing that we will have to do, because we can't use the Regents exams or the 3 through 8 math and ELA, therefore we will have to accompany that with other assessments that will give us a student score. That's how I'm rating it. I'll continue to keep you updated. I'm very disturbed by the new regs. I'm not jumping up and down by these task force recommendations. I don't see it as a forward movement. I really think they're problematic. It sounds like you're giving candy, but it's behind that candy is some other things. Like arsenic-laced candy. That's how I see it. I really do. Anyway, stay tuned. Sorry to come back on that.
Can we see any board members' thoughts on that? Yes. I know some people do.
I'm sorry, I had a question.
No, we're superintendents of the two together.
Hmm? Oh, yeah, no, I just wanted to ask, you know, one of my hobby horses had to do with, you know, the changes to Algebra 2. Did that come up in particular, or was it more sort of a general?
That discussion is going on in the Friday calls that we have with the commissioner's office. It is very much on the radar. We continue to keep it on the radar. The last conversation that they had was, well, we may not need to make a change to put the trigonometry in because the SATs are changing, to which I pointed out, well, the ACTs aren't changing, and children still need to be prepared for pre-calculus, so we're keeping it on the table. So I predict that it does have trig question, but the amount of trig that's on it is covered up to geometry. So it's the trig and beyond. We'll keep on it. They will have to make that change because it doesn't make sense.
I sent them ACT questions.
Absolutely, absolutely. The conversation continues. I have no doubt that it will, maybe not next year, but the following year, we'll go back to adding those trig topics.
But then again, it's all about taking a test. As long as you know enough to take the SAT, you know, they don't think beyond we're giving you enough so that you can pass the SAT, but, you know, what you may need beyond that is not. I read the entire report. I probably felt like you did. I felt it was very elementary-centric. I don't know if that's because most of the feedback they got through the survey was from elementary parents and teachers. I do know that at the forums, most of the parents they heard from, but I think that the conversations about what's going on at the high school level have at least been out there enough that they should have at least been touched upon in the report. I felt the report was way too elementary centric.
I know that that's heard by SED, and I am pretty sure, because I am in conversation, they've put together a math committee to address the high school topics. So I'm hoping that someone from our district will be involved in that.
Yeah. And your point is well taken. It's not just about the SAT or the ACT, but it's still so incredibly short-sighted and really uninformed even in terms of those tests.
I know I always get in trouble when I state my opinion, but to me, the state should cancel the grade 3-8 ELA and math tests for this year. You know, they've already acknowledged the tests are flawed. They're going to a new vendor. They've removed the student tests from APPR for the next 4 years. Since next year's test is supposed to be completely new, there's no way to actually equate them with any results gotten in previous years. The results of Pearson tests don't even get to us till late August, so we can't use them for instruction. So let's just not do them this year. Give the kids and schools a break from the annual torture. Use the days to teach and learn rather than to test and punish. I know as a board we are bound by law to give the tests. I'm not asking that the district opt out of the testing, although I'm not saying I would not support such a measure. But I do think we should lobby the state to just skip the test this year. That would show all the stakeholders that the governor, the commissioner, the regents, and the state ed are not just blowing smoke up our but are really committed to doing what's right for our children. I'm all for accountability, and I think that maybe in the future we can create tests that would accurately measure teachers. But until we get a piece of it, but until we have empirical data that the new tests deliver meaningful results to guide instruction and that they can be used for evaluating teachers, I'm not buying into it. Prove the tests are reliable first. Then and only then can we begin investigating if they can be used as a small part of a new system for evaluating teachers. In the meanwhile, I say we lobby to have the tests canceled this year.
Federal guidelines.
I know there's things we, well, those are changing too. Which brings us to, do you have any more superintendent's announcements or we go back to the agenda? Because more was going on than just on the state level with education. As we had No Child Left Behind replaced with Every Student Should Achieve, or what's it called?
Success.
Every Student Should Achieve, you know. Okay. So there's things going on the federal level as well. And the only thing I'll say that I found encouraging about the national movement was it seemed that a lot of people woke up and realized that local control works and they need to give more local control back to local districts, which is what, you know, all I've been advocating for all along. I probably am more on accountability and rigor than maybe the state is in certain levels, but I always want it to be a decision that we make locally, and if people feel that way and they change, whatever, but it shouldn't be mandates that come down from the federal government or the state. You know, people move to areas like ours for our schools and they expect certain things, and we're here and elected to deliver it, and if we don't, they vote for new people, and they can choose to vote for our school budget or not. So I just firmly want to stress again that I think local control works. Race to the Top was a fiasco, and we need to get money to kids who need money, who need to eat, who need to be, you know, warm, to have clothes. And it's time to stop just throwing money at this as if testing people into oblivion will actually improve anything.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for welcoming me back. Happy holidays, and by the way, the setup looks beautiful in here. You guys did a great job. Looks really great. Very, very welcoming. But anyway, thank you very much for having me back once again. I'm here tonight to talk to you about AP Capstone. I know I made the presentation to you at the very last Board of Education meeting, but since then, I prepared a PowerPoint presentation, really, of course, to share with my faculty at our most recent faculty meeting, but also to add to that the recommendations that I wanted to present to you tonight for how we would like to roll it out, or a couple of recommendations in that way anyway. So we did talk about at the last meeting why AP Capstone, and really we have learned that really AP Capstone is working in response to higher education who have found I don't want to say deficits, but some shortcomings with students at that level where they're saying, you know what, kids are needing greater skills in certain areas, problem solving, planning, conducting studies and investigations, collaborating together. So they've created AP Capstone, which has been around, I think, since 2011. The way we would like to go with AP Capstone would be, since there are two courses in the program, AP Capstone Seminar and AP Capstone Research. We'd be starting off with the seminar course for the next school year, the 16-17 school year, and then in the 17-18 school year, adding the research component, the second course. If you're wondering, students could take one course or both of them. They are two separate AP courses. So depending if for example, they're starting in their senior year and say, you know what, I'd like to take this course. They only have the opportunity to take the 1 year of it. That is fine. We are interested in opening it up to 10th, 11th, and 12th grades, which is the recommendation from the College Board. We described the AP seminar course, and really this is the foundational course. It's the introduction to Capstone. It's where students working in teams and start really learning the skills, the research skills necessary for them to conduct some kind of a study. There is a team project that they'd be working on and presentations they'd be involved in, a written exam and essay presentation as well. The second course is the research course, and this is where they get their hands dirty, doing different kinds of research. And really, it depends on the type of research that they're interested in, which is what, of course, they would be learning as well in the first course. The seminar course is their type of projects that they could be working on. And, of course, there is an exit exam as well to this, the academic thesis paper, approximately 5,000 words, presentation, et cetera, that goes in with it. The graduates of the AP Capstone program, for those students that take both courses, if they score 3 or higher on both of the exams, they'd receive an AP Capstone certificate. If those students also took 4 or more other AP exams during the time that they're here and scored, of course, 3 or higher on those exams, they'd receive the AP Capstone diploma. So which is a unique thing for the students. We if you take a look, we had 114 students in the last school year, the 2014-15 school year, who throughout their time at our high school, those 114 students would have been eligible for the AP Capstone diploma, that is, if they had taken the AP Capstone program. So we do have that many students who take that many AP exams that very well may have benefited from this. Now, we have been talking an awful lot about planning and what we are going to do, what we would recommend doing as far as our rollout. Where we left off at the last board meeting was Ms. Girosh was going to invite other school districts to visit with us, and those are the school districts that are also planning the rollout for the next school year, so we could put our heads together and see what everybody has in mind and what they're thinking. We were pretty happy to hear that we were pretty similar in our logic, our thinking. We have two models, by the way. The first model is the core model. You'll see why in just a moment. And I broke it down into the 2 years. For the core model for the 10th grade, they would be able to take the AP Capstone, if they're interested, the AP Capstone seminar in lieu of English 10R or 10H. It would be taught in that case by an English teacher, but as well collaboratively with a social studies teacher that has a research background. So it would be team teaching, that's correct. The 11th and 12th graders, that would be an elective course for them. If you're wondering why in the 10th grade would I do it that way, well, within our 8-period day, if you remember, the 10th graders do have the health course that they take, so they're really their time is limited. By incorporating an English teacher into teaching the course, they would, of course, incorporate some of the literature that they would be teaching in their English classes, so that this way they would get the benefit of both still in there. And the literary component is a part of the Capstone program, so it would work in very well. There are other school districts that would be doing the exact same thing as us, and some of them have a 9-period day. Okay, we do have other recommendations, as you could see on the board here. It is recommended or suggested that students have an overall grade point average of 90% or better in English honors or 95% in English regents. Again, that is a recommendation or suggestion, especially in our first year of rolling this out. We do want students to feel successful in here. We don't want them to feel overwhelmed by the program. We would recommend, of course, a teacher recommendation. However, students still have the ability to self-select if they're interested. The core model in the second year. Sticking with the seminar course, the second year of that seminar course, we would then take that grade 10 English course and give that to the English teacher. So it would no longer be team taught or co-taught in that year. That social studies teacher then, after seeing and working with the English teacher, would now be able to take on either the second course, the research course, or the seminar course from a different grade level, the 11th or the 12th grade level. As far as the AP Capstone research since that would be starting in that year as well. That would be taught by an English social studies teacher if it was a humanities-based project, or it could be a math science teacher if it was a STEM-based project, because, again, it really depends on the interest of the students. So, again, that's the core model because we're taking one of the core subjects and incorporating that. Okay, we also have a second recommendation. It's the elective model, and that is years 1 and 2. I was able to fit that in into the one slide. Here, for grades 10, 11, and 12, would not have to be taken out of the English class. It would be a social studies elective taught by one of the research teachers. Again, we have similar recommendations for that, as we did with the core model. And the elective model in the second year of it, for the research course, again, that would be for grades 11 and 12, because the 10th graders would have been taking the first year course. That would be taught similarly like we did with the core model, an English social studies teacher or a math science teacher, again, depending on the type of project. Now, if you're wondering, as we've been wondering as well, how would AP Capstone impact our current research program? Because we have had great success with our research program, and of course we are trying to protect that as well. They are different, but they also can work together. Our research program is a 9 through 12 program. It's a multi-year program. AP Capstone is a two-year program. So for those students who want it right from the get-go, can start in 9th grade and get that taste of it. They can go at their own pace with our current research program, where with the AP Capstone, they have the constraints of it being that it's got to get done within that year. Our current program has on-site and off-site research in behavioral and traditional sciences. And actually, when you're looking at the Capstone program, they would have similar experiences through that as well. The current program that we have has the research component to it, which I believe is an important factor to keep in mind. The Siemens, the Intel, all of that is through our current program. The AP Capstone program does not. I was asked at the last meeting, you know, Jim, could a project that's being used for Capstone, could that also be used for Intel or Siemens? And the answer to that is yes. Doing more research on it since our last board meeting, actually, I was able to verify that some of the independent research work that schools do could be considered for this program. So that would really be a good thing that they'd be able to work together. Okay. Now our recommendations. In this part here, I did a lot of thinking, and I know you're probably saying, all right, Jim, what is your thought? Well, we're doing an awful lot of talk this year, in particular with the 9-period day, trying to come up with a plan or a model for the high school on how we would be able to make that happen. But I had to plan this in the event that does not end up coming to be. So I have two recommendations here for you. In the event that we have an 8-period day for next year, my recommendation is to go with the core model so that this way students that are in the 10th grade would still be able to take advantage of the Capstone program. If we did have the full 9-period day, well, then we have that greater flexibility within the day, and students could opt to take the AP Capstone program. I would go with the elective model in that case. And, of course, I would recommend College Board training not only for our teachers but also for their supervisors so that they also have experience and could be able to respond to questions and be more fluent with Capstone. So, in conclusion, as you will see, as you may not even be aware of, there are 46 college majors and 98 careers that according to the College Board, that they've been able to identify that AP Capstone can lead to. Doesn't mean that our current research program doesn't lead to that as well, but they don't have that knowledge of what our current research program is like. So I would imagine that it is very similar. 163 colleges and universities also have developed credit and placement policies for AP Capstone. So what we've been working on since then, which I don't really have a lot of information on it to speak at this time because we really just started this work, but we were curious about the schools that our kids tend to go to. What do they think about Capstone? And what are they doing as far as the credit, where do they give credit for it? It's not necessarily an English class or a science class or a math class. So we're really looking into that still yet. So that's pretty much my capstone presentation for tonight. Do you have any questions for me?
That capstone could be similar to the research program. Are you envisioning off-site options as well for that?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
Yep, it could be.
Okay. You don't have that sketched out where that would be or anything like that, do you?
No, I don't at this point in time because right now we were focusing more on the first year of it.
Okay, and my other question was relating to the 163 colleges that take some kind of capstone credit. I'm just wondering which schools they were. Was it a range? Was it states?
I actually can email that to you tomorrow if you'd like. They actually have it on the website, so
okay.
I can print that out and send that to you.
Or I could check on my phone right now, so it's all good.
All
right, thanks very much.
You did that already?
Yeah, I didn't say that because I'd be paying attention very carefully.
Exactly,
right?
Yes. Thank you.
Anyone else?
For the Intel research program, that's available to anyone with any grade point average?
Yeah, that's open to anybody.
The research?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Any student that's interested in being a part of that program. That's correct.
I'm just wondering, you're mentioning gen ed students with, say, a 95 average. Has there been any thought to, say, students with special needs who might want to access this program and what... how that would be done? Suppose it was a collaborative student who had a very strong interest and ability in a particular area.
Absolutely. I mean, again, these are just recommendations. It's not with our self-selection practice, we don't have that and anything clear cut for any of our courses where you have to have a certain grade point average to take a course. So for special education students, that definitely could work.
Okay, I'm just wondering, or say you have a.
There's not many districts who have implemented the program locally, and so although we've been on the phone and had meetings with the college board, I'd be hesitant to say in the first year with going through it that what the course would be. Our teachers will not be going to the training until the summertime. So yes, we're hearing about the expectations of the course being extremely rigorous, being careful of what students you place in the course. And without the information of having our teachers go through that training and implementing it the first year, I would hope that more students take advantage of this course down the road, but in its first year, I'd want to see a more select group of children going. If a child in a special education course has the grade point average and obviously has the ability to do it, they would not be any different from any other student.
Right, but I guess what I'm thinking is you might have a student who, say, has the capability but would still need that on-ramp. So a student who, say, has organizational problems. I would sort of hate to see a program that, was closed to a student with an IEP right off the bat.
Yeah, I don't want to say that it's closed, but we haven't implemented it, I don't know that I could predict or know those expectations, like the organizational pieces. There's a lot of collaborative work expected of students, and the teacher acts more as a facilitator as opposed to a teacher, and there is responsibility on the students to carry out specific parts of their research and the project. In our visitation to Hewlett-Woodmere, when we spoke with the students, and some of those kids found it very challenging when they went to ask a teacher a question and the teacher was not allowed to respond to certain things. The kids had to go back and figure it out. So there are parts of the course that I think are very different from things that we've currently done based on the experiences or the conversations that we've had with kids. Again, I'm not saying that anyone should be limited not to take the course, but in its first year, until we know more about it and our teachers go through that training and we're able to go through the course in its first year, I'd be
selective. Yeah, I appreciate selective. That you're to be honest and realistic about it. But one of the things I've always been very proud of in our district is that you know, anybody can take research. And we have so many kids. If you go to that seminar that they have at the, that they're required to go to, it, you know, the auditorium is basically filled. And, again, it's something that I hope would continue in this also.
Jim, before, I think you said that you presented this to your staff. Can you give us an idea of how it was, what the reaction was, and what their input might have been?
I did the presentation last week at my faculty meeting, and I had a lot of other topics in there as well. Although I did go through the whole entire PowerPoint with them, we didn't really have time for what we're doing right now, the Q&A afterwards. But I did get to meet the following day with my building representative from the SRC. And, you know, I had asked if there was any kind of fallout or feedback that I could have gotten. He said at that point in time he didn't have any. I did get a couple of questions, you know, from it afterwards, though. Teachers would have liked to have had some greater input in taking on a new course to the school. I thought that we did talk about it in our curriculum committee, you know, meeting last year, where we do have some teacher representatives. But I'd have to go back and check my notes on that. So it definitely is food for thought, though.
And one other question. Have we been given any of the costs of this? Can we be given?
I should know. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I got a bunch, if I could. First of all, I appreciate all the hard work you've done, and I really hope we can pull this program off. But I just think there's a lot more work and a lot more questions that I'd like to hear answered. So, as an example, will the AP Capstone get a grade of 1 to 5 or a numerical grade?
Actually, I did have that in the slide there, but I did skim over it. Yes, you are correct. It does have the 1 to 5 typical, you know, AP grading scale.
So it has no numerical grade. It won't be a factor in anyone's GPA.
No.
Okay. What would it look like for a student, you know, because, okay, you know, you have the option of having it replace, you know, core English then. So they would have an English class that basically wouldn't count in their CUM is what we're proposing on the first look through?
Well,
a 1 to 5 score can't be figured into a GPA based on current technology. So the class itself gets a numerical grade. Okay, so now I'm going to double back. Okay.
I misunderstood.
So
do
we consider this class to be above what we consider now to be 10th grade honors English or below? And if it's above, have we been consideration that it should be weighted because of the fact that it is above
well,
honors?
Well, since it's an AP class, it will be weighted.
It will get AP weighting?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
The other thing is when you talked about the elective option, I've been big on the 9-period day, but you know we have this core group of kids we'll call our overachievers. And my goal of a 9-period day isn't to have them take another AP. It was that maybe those kids would actually take a elective or lunch or something like that. And I look at this as for our overachieving kids, all we're going to do is add a 9-period day where they're going to take another AP in 10th and 11th grade. And I just don't know that that's the spirit of what I felt the 9-period day should be for. People may disagree, but, you know, I felt it was to get some additional help for the kids who needed, you know, reinforcement in their classes. They could have lab classes or to open opportunities up. But it makes me nervous to have this just be another AP that our overachievers are expected to take on top of their schedule. So I'd like to see, you know, we have a certain group of kids who take math and earth science in 8th grade. In this AP capstone world, when we get through it, what are their 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grades look like? I look at this and I say, you know, we're trying to get kids to take AP Global in 10th, but then we also want them to now take a class that would be an elective in a 9-period day that's harder than English 10 on top of English 10?
Well, you could, if you wanted to, still keep it as part of the English 10 like I did in the core model. I just wanted to give you an option of one having it where it is from the core one removed from that.
I think what we're missing here is I don't think there's necessarily been as much discussion with teachers as I would have liked to have had as having it be presented as part of a thing versus real discussions. But more than that, has anyone really modeled what it's going to look like for the children who are doing this through their careers? And I bring this up to tie into something else that I read today that got me a little frustrated. And that was we just published the college career choice. These are the courses you should take. And it frustrated to see that the only areas we're suggesting AP calculus was if you're going to be an engineer. It doesn't say AP calculus for business majors. It says supercalc. If you're going to be a lawyer or a doctor, we don't say AP physics. And I look at that document, and I'm going to come back to, I think if we're going to do this, let's do it right and really evaluate taking the high school to be towards this AP. If we're going to go in this direction, I know people say, Mr. Battan, you're crazy. You're trying to shove all these APs down kids' throats. Not everyone's ready for it. But I just see this as like throw it against the wall, hope it sticks. And I was really hoping for an integrated plan that looked at the impact on children and on our guidance and how it would help the kids and where they should be. And when I read that career guide, I was very frustrated and disappointed in what I saw. I'm going to be honest with you. And I'm sure people worked very hard on it. But I listened to parents all the time saying, what should I do? My kid's a junior. What courses should they take? You know, I mean, Mr. Battan, you talk about all these APs. We should always do rigor. And I get this, you know, on the ball fields. I get it in ShopRite. I get it on social media. And I feel like I'm a lone wolf. And if I am, I'm fine. I'll stop. But if we really believe in the spirit that this is where we want to go, which I think we do, if we're going to do AP capstone, I really think it needs to be integrated into an overall plan that's much bigger than just the first year it might be this, the second year it might be that. And I appreciate all the hard work, all the work you've done. I don't want anyone to think that I'm marginalizing the work that's been done here. But I think this is much bigger than that if we're going to do it right. And I'm just not seeing that that level is here yet.
Well, you know, with all due respect, Mr. Battan, the Career Path Guide was created actually a year ago, and it was created to assist students and their parents with our elective courses, more so than with our core courses, being able to identify for them all of our elective courses, what would be the advantage of them taking them. Yes, we should incorporate more of our core courses as well into that. It is, like I said, it's a brand new document. Is there room for improvement on it? Absolutely. And I'll take your suggestions into consideration and get to work on that.
And I just don't think it's a one-size-fits-all, as with anything. You know, kids have different aspirations, as do parents, of what's expected. And I just think we should have that whole act together as a bigger picture on where we're going, especially if we're going to implement this AP capstone program. Ginger?
My thing is that we as a team should be discussing it, and it's hard sometimes because I know that you're passionate about it, and I think that I applaud your being passionate, but I think that the high school, I think that everybody's worked on it. They've had a vision, and now to throw this sort of in it, it's not going to happen tomorrow, and I think that we just have to all be on the same page where we want to go. And I agree that we want to stress and we want to take some of our core subjects and pull them in and up the ante on it. But I just think we have to have another discussion on it as we go along. Yeah.
Well, I understand, but if I could just, from a high school principal perspective, continue having your discussions, but the likelihood of us then being able to get students to enroll and take these courses, because we've just started our process. I mean, we've been working on these for months, all of our new course options. I would like to have had a parent meeting come January to discuss with parents what we have here. But if not, if you're not comfortable with that, then understand that could be a consequence.
I don't want to hold you up from what you're doing. And what?
Can we do them in parallel? In other words, still do it, but still have these bigger discussions.
I just think maybe we should just talk about realistic expectations. And I think maybe that's really what it is. What is realistic? What can be achieved? And making sure that the path that we're doing isn't one that we fall short on or anything else, but one that we know the high school, at least for next year, is comfortable doing, and then building upon that. And that's all I'm saying is I just would like to see some of what you want incorporated, but not maybe the largeness of it. That's all.
Some of what's at issue is maybe you know, the notion of who and what this is for, which is what you were bringing up, and that this is about, you know, for the super achievers, which is one of the reasons why I was wondering about, well, what about, you know, special needs students who might be interested? The other thing I was thinking about, because frankly, I was this kind of student. I wasn't a science kid. And I probably wouldn't have been a social science psychology kind of researcher. So I do think it opens doors, say, for somebody who's very gifted in English, that kind of thing, that would allow them to maybe experience higher level research. So I'm wondering if, in terms of how we think about it, it's not just about yet another thing for the super achievers, but it might reach another kind of student and give that student the opportunity to do.
If you speak to the College Board, they will tell you they don't want this course to be for just the high-achieving students. They want the full gamut.
Gary, if I could take a moment. I would say that, you know, some of the feedback that we've gotten both from parents, the Board of Education, from our administrators, is the need for students to do more research and more writing. And although there are pockets of research and writing in across all disciplines, I believe that based on the feedback that we've gotten from the districts and College Board, the districts that are implementing, that this would address that component of it. And it is very student driven, and there are expectations for kids within that course. And as Jim highlighted in the PowerPoint, that collaboration, the problem solving, I think there's a need for that. And as Emily said, we'd like to see more children participate in the course. However, we are hearing that it's very rigorous. So in its first year, I would see it more as that 10H student. You're asking who would be prepared to take this. I see it as the 10H child. However, I believe that down the road, once we become more comfortable with it, that I would like to see all students take advantage of it at some point in their career to be able to take at least the seminar course. I do believe that it would also feed our research program. I think that there are times, and it could be how we sell the research program, but I don't know that the typical eighth grader really understands the research program, and that there are opportunities within our current research program, and although it's growing, in the social science portion of it. I think kids look at research sometimes as just science. And for this,
the district did up until a few years ago.
So I think the course could open some doors for some children and to really expand our current program, whether they go into the competition or begin to take the research component, which, as you can see, is a 5,000-word paper that is very challenging. But again, good preparation for kids. And wherever we choose to fit it in, I believe that perhaps 10H might be the best place at this point in time. But if there's an opening and the kids can fit it in their day, whether it's 10H or as an elective, I think it would be beneficial. Again, I think we should start a little bit small and then grow the program.
That's trying to say that, you know, we can't go full steam. Success is built. If we didn't learn it from math programs,
right,
where we just jumped into the frying pan and everything tested the oil in it, but if we do it slowly.
I think you're mixing your metaphors, but
no,
yes.
You were going to say testing the water.
Right. Well, it was just Hanukkah,
but
so it was oil.
I just put everything up front. I just think we have to take our time and do it the right way, and you have to have a lot of input, and we have to make sure it's successful. And by doing it, it's just, to me, the baby steps first.
And Ginger, also the buy-in from teachers. You know, we have to want teachers to want to go to the training. It's a week-long of training. Both our English, both Maria Cornisi and Jeff Yagloff have offered to take a week out of their summer to also attend and participate in the training so that they are invested in it. And if it's their teachers teaching the course, they are very well aware of the expectations and can provide the support. We do have some teachers that are interested, but again, you want to keep the balance and make sure that we're put the right people in the right seats as well as put the right students in the course.
Well, we saw that with the IB program, Gary.
I just also wanted to say that as a district, we've spent a lot of time and effort in STEM and STEAM, and I'm certainly not minimizing the need for that. This is, though, a humanities-driven, I'm assuming from what we've gotten, a more humanities-driven. And I'm very excited about that because not everybody is a science or math person. And so to me, this kind of balances, brings a little more balance, and maybe addresses the needs of a different segment of student. So I'm very excited about it.
One of the things that was striking me about this is I heard, I've been hearing off to my left over here, well, it's like IB that way. And one of my friends who lives on the West Coast has a daughter who went through and got an IB diploma. And while she wasn't particularly a fan of the IB program, one of the things she really did like about it was how much high-level writing got in. And that's something that I don't think happens as much in AP courses. It's a different emphasis. So, and especially for somebody who might be, you know, a very good student, but whose strength is in writing rather than, you know, multiple choice tests, I think this is, you know. And again, I hear your concerns, but I also see some of the positives in terms of who we can reach and what skills they might bring to it that aren't necessarily being addressed.
So I'm just a little bit concerned about timetable for that I think Jim was trying to articulate. There is a timetable to this so that Lori and Jim can get the children are going to be signing up for courses. So whatever discussion needs to occur with the board so that he can then be comfortable to either give this program for next year or put it on the back burner, we need that direction pretty soon because they need to set a program going.
And my whole thing is I agree with the small steps to start, but I saw this and I think it kind of came out as like this is the equivalent of IB when you get to it, you know, from a philosophical point of view. And if that's where we want to go, hey, I'm all for it. I love this stuff. You know, this is what I've been preaching anyway, so I don't have a problem supporting us getting there and starting with small steps. But that's the vision I want to hear everyone really embracing, that that's where we want to go and where we want to end up. 4 or 5 years down the road, it's an AP version of IB, which is what I believe this program is. And I just want to hear from you guys that we're all on the same page.
That's why we're presenting it to you. I mean, that's what this is. What this is all about. Can I?
The AP capstone piece, the AP capstone diploma, is really, Gary, what you're describing. But I think, honestly, that's a choice for kids. Because philosophically, what the AP capstone diploma suggests is that your traditional AP exam, which Emily, AP courses, and you're correct, are more content-driven, unfortunately less time for research and writing. So in AP's vision, in a perfect world, those AP courses become really food for thought, things to expose and possibly ignite inquiry in students, which they pursue in the AP capstone piece. So that really becomes a place for them to build their inquiry and have some ideas about what they want to pursue. Gary, initially you spoke about a comprehensive piece, you know, a comprehensive vision. AP Capstone, the nature of the research is really sits on some seminal documents that are defining our expectations for kids. The social studies new framework, which is built around inquiry skills. The Common Core learning standards. If you look at the AP Capstone information, they really talk to you about where this program rests on, you know, those significant documents that drive, Debbie, you're right, the humanities aspect of that. The kid who isn't a social science research kid and isn't a STEM kid. So some other districts are really using this as a cornerstone of inquiry, which has research inherent in it. But I think, you know, there's a piece of all of us who, when we say research, we think intel. Research is inquiry, and that's really seminal to the types of work we're doing with our kids, especially our younger kids who, you know, have really more of those, have been exposed more to those foundational skills than high school students right now. One other point, if I could just make, you talked about, you know, the elective piece versus the core piece and what you, in your mind, envisioned for a 9-period day. One of the things that we've learned is that Capstone doesn't belong to any department. It's hosted by a department because the skill set of it permeates throughout every discipline. So that's why you see some of the models where, you know, the seminar course is taught in one place and then the research component might shift to another department, and you really don't know that until you see the nature of student interest. So, thanks.
The teacher can actually select some of the projects and some of the studies of the kids. So it's not like we're handed a curriculum and these are your research topics. The teacher actually guides the students and picks a couple of topics, and then the kids work off of those suggestions. So again, that's where the teacher choice comes in, whether it's social studies or an English teacher.
Where, say, a student comes up with a project the way it happens in social science?
I don't believe so. Again, I believe the teacher chooses an overarching theme, and then the kids work off of that.
So, yeah, I mean, look, I'm certainly supportive of moving forward. The only thing, I don't know what impact this has in terms of getting interest, is having the core model or the elective model. If it doesn't matter right now, you can still move forward with engaging interest. I don't know, but certainly it has a scheduling impact. You know, I guess the one thing I'm thinking of is whether having the core model, even if there is a 9-period day, and I know you've spoken to why maybe the elective model is preferred if there's a 9-period day. I know Gary mentioned some reasons why we were talking about a 9-period day to give, you know, people a little bit of a break, have lunch, those that don't have lunch, and so forth. Do you need that direction now? I mean,
10th grade program next year if we're
going right now we only have an 8-period school day. So if you're going forward, you're going forward with the core model.
We have right now already started our course selection process with students. We put on there already if you'd be interested to check off if you're interested in the AP Capstone program in case it happens. But like we did with other new course proposals, you know, they're to be determined type of a thing. So we are going to get an idea of student interest, but from there, yeah, I'm going to need direction from you, whether or what way you are supportive of us putting it into our program. Because of the nature of
it. I'm saying, but at this point, core model is the only one that
Until
we could do.
Right.
Yeah, because if
but
I did
the
it.
Notion, is the board supportive of us moving forward with AP Capstone, and if that's the case, then Jim has a direction. He needs that.
I think we are.
Beginning with the 10th grade honors, you said?
10-H.
Okay.
I still like costs, but
yes, I'm still. Okay, yeah, I can go over a little bit.
Bring that information to you at the next board
sure.
meeting.
Sure.
But it sounds like it's a
go. Okay.
It sounds like you can go into the holidays knowing this is a
private.
Yes.
Thank you, guys. I think you clarified a lot of stuff for us that maybe was, at least for me, a lot that wasn't so clear. So I feel a lot better about this.
We'll
and
come back with numbers next
cool.
Time.
Great.
So the success of AP
Thank
Capstone.
You. Did you want me to stick around?
Yeah. So,
he's having so much fun.
I know. Thank you, Jim.
Pure and light, ladies.
No, I do want to say thank you to the team because this has been a long conversation and trying to make strategic decisions based on the needs of students. But at this point, Jim is going to spend a little time just going over after the last board meeting, some curriculum meetings, some PTA meetings. We received some feedback on the course proposals. Some of them are just slight tweaks or perhaps even a typo on one of the sheets. So he's going to go over that right now.
Yeah, there's no PowerPoint for this one. for this one with the aeronautics course that we had proposed, it was written incorrectly. It was written as a half credit. It's actually one credit. Same thing with the green technology. So both of those are one credit courses. With the aquatic training, that one is a name change from life-saving or lifeguarding skills preparation to aquatic training. Yes, it is a little bit clearer. Yep, that's correct. Thank you, Ms. Girash. With our advanced yoga, we put a prerequisite in there for beginner yoga, I've already said, but we also wrote down yoga, depending on which it was that you had taken. Just we want to make sure we're very clear. And the course descriptions for both of them were clarified as well. Same thing with the core fitness class. And the other one was the AP Capstone, which, of course, is the course proposal for what we talked about tonight. And the other one was for the world language for Italian 1. And really that one was just explaining a little bit further, describing the course a little bit as well. So it was a little bit change in that. The other change that I had to tell you about was the two flow charts, the one for the business department and the one for the art department. These are the visuals of all of their course offerings, and there really were just reflected changes to them so they read easier. The suggestions really came from the guidance department, who were looking at it because they work with students and felt that when they're meeting with students, it would flow better and be easier to explain if they looked a little bit differently. And they had some really good suggestions. Yep.
Tonight, I'm going to ask that you first entertain a public participation and then vote on it after that. We talked about doing that tonight.
I know there's been a lot of discussion about AP calculus and super calculus. Are we planning on offering, I don't even know what the name of it is, what our calculus used to be called? Are we planning on offering that as well next year?
We were not, no.
And we're not because?
Well, I think in many regards, from my perspective, super calculus has just got a bad rap because it was a bad start, the way it wasn't presented, the way it should have been presented, all of that. But looking at how our students are doing in the course, I think they're doing well. They're doing really very well. Calculus is not a high school course. It is a college-level course. We're bringing that to our students here at the high school level. They are doing very well. When we spoke with the teacher at the beginning of the year and there was some difficulties with the students in the class, I think a big part of it was that some of the expectations that students were going to have coming out of pre-calculus they would have had and they didn't have coming into that course, the super course. So we were being reflective of that, and I know Mr. Bowen has been working with his teachers to make sure they're addressing those in the pre-calculus course as well so we wouldn't experience that going forward next year. I don't believe so, but I mean, I guess there's a possibility of some. I haven't had students coming to me, advocating for that. And I don't know if they would know to do that. Yep, they could. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's true too.
I'm a little confused because I understand that SUPA is offered through Syracuse, et cetera, hence the SU part of it. But I guess what I'm wondering is my understanding was that the course that existed before was called something along the lines of college calculus. So how is it not a college course?
It wasn't affiliated with any college to give college credit towards it. That was just the name of the course.
Right, but there was some exposure. And I mean, we have college Spanish that doesn't involve college. Right, but we have college English that's not.
But they also didn't have to answer to a college. They didn't have to submit their syllabus, for example, or their exams.
Yeah, the course that Jeff was just talking about, which is really preparing the kids, would it not in any way help a student who might not be the student all the way up there for a Cal course, but is taking preparation for when he or she goes on to college, that they're going to do it, so it would be like setting a foundation so that they might not struggle as much, because I'm going to say it again, not everybody's a math student.
Yep. Yep.
And so that there's got to be a percentage of kids in the high school that have struggled right through from first grade on, that math has been the hardest course they have to take. So if we offered something for those kids so that at least they had a foundation, it's not always about the grade, but it's about the beginning to understand and stuff. I mean, that would be my concern and my thought about it.
Okay.
We're talking about calculus. We're already talking about those that are accelerated in math to begin with. And I thought that to address Ginger's point, that's what you also have Super Calculus for. If you don't want to get the college credit, you could still get the exposure and the prep for calculus in college, but you don't have to – it's not of the –
You don't have to do the Super part.
Right.
Correct. I mean, that was one of the distinctions we talked about of the AP, AB, and BC Calc in comparison to SUPA, right? So I think that the idea from what I'm hearing you say.
The level of SUPA in comparison to what we used to offer, because I see Ginger as, you know, for the kids who maybe aren't ready for college-level calculus.
Where are they?
They're going to have to take calculus.
That's the SUPA, is what I understood.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know.
I've kind of changed my thinking on this a little bit, and I'm thinking about my experience as a tutor. About, say, 5 years ago, if I often start off by asking what math they're taking. And 5 years ago, if I had an 11th grader saying he or she was taking pre-calculus, I would sort of assume pretty good math student. I'd have a rough idea of where that student was. And now I'm running into a lot of students who are in pre-calculus. Apparently, you know, they're good. I'm glad more students are taking pre-calculus. I'm glad more students are accelerating. But if we want more students to be taking algebra in eighth grade, the result is we're going to have kids taking pre-calculus who maybe are not so much math people, but are still going to want to continue with math. So I'm wondering, you know, what is going to happen for those students? And I guess I have concerns also that SUPA wasn't different enough from AB, from what I heard, which is why I have a little bit of a concern about not having that level.
It's like the safety net. It's affording the kids the opportunity who just aren't the real math student, but know that they're going to be confronted with it down the road.
Well, it's giving them a little bit of background, a little bit of practice before they have to take calculus in college.
So, sorry. I see that.
Yeah, so just to reiterate, I mean, calculus has always been a college-level course. When we offered it, it was never called college calculus. It was just called calculus. The big difference that we currently have is a lot of prerequisite skills are done in September, whereas in the AB course, they really kick off with the curriculum right away. So that curriculum is typically done around mid-March so that they're preparing for the AP exam. This course is prerequisites in September, and then Calc 1 more or less covered from October all the way till the end of June, or mid-June, I should say. So there's a lot of, right. So the Syracuse calculus definitely refreshes some of those prerequisites, whereas AB jumps right into it. But again, it's Calc 1, which is a college-level course.
Are you welcome?
Excellent. Thank you to Jim Murray and the chairs and everyone who participated in these enlightening discussions, and I'm sure there's even more going on back in the building, so thank you very much. Public participation. District policy number 1510.1 provides that persons wishing to make comments or raise questions shall, one, state their name and address, and two, indicate on whose behalf they are speaking if a non-resident. The policy prohibits public discussion on matters relating to staff and students at which their reputation, privacy, or rights to due process, those of others could be in some way violated. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes. I ask that everyone be respectful when others are talking, and please be kind. The floor is open. Yes, 3 minutes.
Eileen Dershowitz, 10 Irene Lane South, Plainview. I'm speaking as an individual tonight about requesting the reintroduction of local calculus and honors social studies. It's very easy to look at a transcript and question why the parent of a student getting an 80 in a challenging course like SUPA would have an issue, or why a student getting an 88 in Global 9H would level down to Regents in 10th grade instead of continuing to AP World. But it's the parents who know the true cost of those grades. Whether it's the literal cost of hiring tutors, or the physical and emotional costs of staying up until 1 in the morning, or giving up an instrument or an after-school activity in order to complete all their work on time and maintain those grades. Not all students can handle the highest level of every class available for a variety of reasons, but they deserve the opportunity to be challenged. Not all students who were whizzes at 6th grade math and so chose the advanced track remain whizzes with higher math concepts, but they deserve a chance to finish the track. Additionally, as someone who has been through the college application process once recently and is beginning that process again, the phrase that I've heard time and again from admissions officers isn't just we want to see them challenge themselves, but we want to see students challenge themselves and succeed. We hear about how many more AP papers are written, but we don't hear about the unintended negative consequences of that. Even when students taking AP Global were a small, select group, we never had a 100% passing rate on the AP exam. With larger numbers of students taking that course every year, even if the passing percentage remains the same, more students will fail. Since all AP students must take the AP exam, we will have more students left with the Hobson's choice of reporting a failing AP grade on their college applications or not forwarding the grade and letting admissions counselors assume that it was an unfavorable result. The wealth of AP offerings we have in this district has turned into a double-edged sword, as students are getting the message that if they don't take the most challenging program possible, no matter what the cost, they will wind up on the dust heap of college applications. My 11th grader recently recognized that a friend of hers was having panic attacks. When my daughter asked that friend to please speak with someone, the answer she got was, "I barely have enough time to get my work done as it is. I don't have time to talk to someone." The board has been very responsive to the undue stress placed on elementary students by state testing. I would hope you would be as responsive to the stress being placed on our high school students by the new emphasis on AP and college-level courses to the exclusion of everything else. Please bring back local calculus and honor social studies courses.
Sabina Perchekli, 41 Mitchell Avenue. I just have a question. What's going on with Sing?
We have a problem. And the problem is that we have a program that is loved, and clearly lots of kids benefit from it. But it has gotten to the point where the number of hours that it requires to put the program together is so onerous that staff members no longer wish to participate in it. So in order to keep it going, we try to get parents to participate, to supervise. But there are issues with that, in that we have children with IEPs, we have children with needs, and we need to adhere to some of to all of our policies in terms of fingerprinting, DASA, and all of that. So the board put together, without having budgeted for it, last meeting, they asked for a supervisor off the parents, because since they're no longer certificated people doing the club. They put together a stipend for someone with administrative capacity to supervise the supervisors. Nobody came forward. So we now have a situation where we do have parents who have come forward to do the actual work, but no one in the administration or teachers with administrative license, no staff member has come forward to take the stipend. So this is something the board has put some money behind trying to get this done. It doesn't seem as if we're going to be able to do things this year. And we have tried, but I don't believe that we're going to be able to do that this year.
Susan Stewart, 36 Bluebird Lane, Plainview, New York. I'm not talking about aquatics. I came to applaud the district for trying to bring Capstone in. There's a saying, if you do something you love every day of your life, you'll never call it work. I think Capstone, seeing a child go through independent research for 4 years, through the ups and the downs, but enjoying herself, enjoying what they do, getting the rewards from it, being part of Project Challenge, Odyssey of the Mind, things like that, group-natured projects, and having the mentor and relationship with teachers. And that relationship is priceless. Being able to be walk in and say, I had an idea. What do you think? Now, it should happen at every level, and we know that's true. But in the case of public schools, we have larger classes some years and other years. Capstone will bring that relationship. Seminar and research and the higher thinking. I have a child in Metmunk right now. He's in second year of high school, sophomore. And he is so willing to work for his advisor and go that extra mile beyond. And that's a club. But the wealth that he's getting and what he's doing, now that's what I would connect to Capstone. And I really hope it is able to be brought down, because he never thought of research because it was it's STEM and he saw his sister doing it. But seeing things like in Metmunk and doing Moot and Mock Court and the amount of work that their kids are already doing, and his writing for classroom work has increased because of club work. So if you can figure out the nitty-gritty of how to propose it to an rising junior, so what we would kind of have to know. I'm going to now kind of contradict myself, because I do love, I do like the AP program. I think it's a preparatory for colleges, and even colleges that do no longer take the standardized tests will ask for APs or subject exams. There needs to be a place, because when you love something, it's not a problem. When you don't love something, it's a challenge, even for a smart child or for a smart human being. So places where kids might show more aptitude in humanities, but not in the sciences. They can't go from an AP down to a regents level. It red flags them. Until we decide as a district to get rid of either all honors and make sure everybody's being taught to a certain level and have only two places, it's really hard not to red flag a college admissions when you go up and down on your levels. So that needs to maybe be thought about, because like I said, if you do something you love, you'll never have to work. So, and I think the Capstone program will do that for a lot of students that don't have maybe the science. Look, my kid who was science ended up with winning psychology. I mean, she didn't go into that, but that's where the Lyme disease ended up in. So, go figure. You don't know what's going to come your way. So that's my point, and I hope you do it.
Hi there. My name's Lauren Gelman, 65 Roundtree Drive. I just wanted to quickly thank you so much for implementing the wonderful CASE team program at the Kindergarten Center this year. Last year, I spoke at a board meeting requesting enrichment for our kindergartners who were starting school an hour later than usual. And I'm happy to report, at least from this parent's perspective, that I think it's a huge success.
My son is enrolled 5 days a week, and it really makes him look forward to going to school every day. His favorites are Mad Science, and on Thursday nights, he gets giddy because he knows he has computer on Friday. We do science projects as a family. My three-year-old even gets excited by them. And I'm just so thrilled that Dr. Lewis was able to work with Mrs. Dender so quickly to make this happen. And I'd love to encourage you to expand it to the four elementary schools for next year. That's it. Thank you.
Stephanie Nelkins, 55 Acorn Lane. By the way, nice desks and stuff. It looks really good. The only problem is this screen sort of blocks, depending on where you sit. It just needs maybe just be like recessed or something. But other than that, it looks really nice. Very, very cool. I'm still confused about trigonometry. Time marches on. I understand it seems New York State is confused also. And I don't blame them, but I wish they kind of would have figured that out before they thrust these kids into a program. You know, listen, it is what it is. We're stuck on, you know, in a bad situation. I'm just trying to make the best of it because you have kids this year and certainly next year who are caught up in this catch-22, so to speak. I still do not know. I have not gotten any calls regarding this. I know Julia had said you would call me. I imagine I'm sure you're busy with a lot of things regarding, you know, what is the plan? These are the, what I would like to just see. Look, I'm a parent. I just need it broken down for me. These are the 15 topics from Trig. These are the days that we're teaching them. That's all I need to see. That's my idea of a plan. I looked online. I didn't see anything like that. I'd like to know what it is. All I'm trying to do is put together an education for my child so he could still potentially be on a calculus track. So he could be on the BC calculus track that he deserves to be on. Currently, I have concerns about even filling out a form for his classes for next year for pre-calc because, quite frankly, I don't know what those classes even are. I don't know the difference between honors pre-calc and regular pre-calc because it's going to be a new class. It has to backtrack and fit stuff in. It's been said that they're going to fit things in here and we have to make sure it fits into stuff there. I don't know. All I know is this major monkey wrench. I'm intrinsically involved from grades 6 through geometry, all the levels in between in math, and I see multiple disconnects. I can understand from working with 7th graders why the 8th graders in algebra can't solve equations. It's just so clear. I see all these disconnects, and my fear, because I unfortunately don't understand the algebra 2 as much as I wish I did, I just can't even imagine what disconnects are going to be for the next 2 years, which are going to be such a struggle and really should have been that shining achievement and what a great thing. And I don't even know if it's doable. I don't even know if it's doable. Personally, as far as SUPA and calculus, I'll push for my son to take, at the bare minimum, AB. At least I know I can get a tutor in AB calculus that's very familiar with it, and we can figure, you know, if that's, you know, that's my worst-case scenario. I'm very concerned about things that are new. You know, and it's no offense to anyone, but we've been involved in new math programs for 3 years, and it hasn't been a picnic. It's been really terrible, absolutely terrible. There's been nothing good about it, and as it's gone up, it's just become more and more of a problem. Again, I patiently ask week after week. I do my best to be polite. What's the plan for Trig? I understand New York State may not know, or this, it doesn't matter. I have a kid. There's a lot of kids in this scenario. What are we doing for them? This is not just the honors kids. This is all kids. These are kids. My friend's son is an engineering student. He came home from college, and you know what? He said, Mom, you never advanced me in math. So here's a kid who's an engineering student who wasn't pushed into the math. You know, he never did that. So you do have kids that maybe they aren't even advanced in math, and maybe they just took regular courses, but they will be taking calc, they will be taking things that they need the trig. You don't know that. You can't just write them off.
Thank you. We've heard your comments. We're doing our best for the kids.
But, Gary, that's not an answer. I hate to be mean, but I get comments of, Stephanie, we're going to call you. My phone doesn't ring. Again, I'm being very polite about this. This is going on for over a month, and it's not fair.
People who say they'll get back to you will get back to you, but thank you very much.
Okay, I appreciate it. You're welcome, but what's my answers?
Someone will get back to you.
Gary, that's not an answer. I'm sorry, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I'm hearing the same thing week after week, you know, every time I come here. What's the plan?
Thank you.
That's the answer? Thank you? All right, well, you're welcome, Gary. You're welcome, and I have to say, I'm extremely disappointed.
Jacques Wolfner, 151 Sutton Drive. First of all, I want to welcome Dr. Lewis back, and I'm looking forward to your speedy full recovery. I was surprised, pleasantly surprised this weekend. I had some of my questions answered by email over the weekend. And I want to thank Mr. Cunningham for his thoughtful and complete response to my question. There was also, Dr. Lewis, you also made a comment about my email about the capital program. And I feel very strongly about it. As a member of the committee, we, at the last minute, added the possibility of two new classrooms for $765,000. That was also presented to the public. Last week, 2 weeks ago, the construction managers showed that there would be new classrooms at two schools. That's a minimum of four, maybe more, at $765,000 per pair of classrooms. Now, this was not presented to the public. It wasn't the committee, in their presentation to the school board, had allowed for two classrooms, not four, not six, not eight, but construction management presented at least a minimum of four classrooms. And as a member of the committee, I feel very disappointed, and I think the board also has a responsibility to the voting public. They voted for the bond issue based on the possibility of two classrooms, not four, not six.
Jacques, if I could, we had a bond vote, and you're absolutely right. The bond vote included two classrooms with a choice of two potential sites, and a third classroom was added as a possible B project if money was left at the end, which was done through the minutes. You can read in the minutes. However, when we were discussing the kindergarten center later on in those discussions, it was discussed that we would add additional classrooms if they were needed to Parkway and Pasadena to make room for the children who'd be coming in for extra classrooms so that no one had to have art on a cart or any of those things that, you know, left such a bad taste in everyone's mouth, and we don't want to go there. And you'll get more. I'm taking your time
here. Of course, no problem.
Also, you're very aware that in the entire discussion of the bond, we talked about that we would be doing capital projects from three sources, from the bond itself, from the capital reserve, and from our annual budgets with our transfer to capital. If any additional classrooms are added beyond the two that are in the bond, they would be added by either a future capital reserve, which, quite frankly, we don't have any plans on, but it's a possibility, or the next budget as far as the transfer to capital in that budget, which would be brought to the voters and would be made very clear that this was in that expense. But there is no attempt whatsoever to put any more than two classrooms from the bond into the buildings in the coming year.
Well, we recognize that if that were the case, other projects that were included in the bond issue and presented to the public would have to suffer.
We're not doing that.
Right. Doing it that way.
Right. Okay.
I hope you – does that clarify it for
it
you better?
It clarifies it somewhat, yes. I want to thank Mr. Cunningham for his timely and complete response to me on item 8.5, which was bid 883. Thank you very much, Mr. Cunningham. I also have questions, and I'd like to hear a fuller discussion from the board on item 8.2 or 8.3, which are interdisciplinary training contracts. I just want to hear a little bit more about it. In addition to that, I want to wish everybody happy holidays and the best for the new year.
Shishko, 3 Rose Lane. I just want to give out the last 2 cups from Stratford Road. You're welcome. Happy holidays.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Do I have a motion for routine business? Ginger, Emily, hold separations.
7.1.
We're going to hold that, correct?
I believe the date
may be. Yeah, okay. Okay. Any other discussions or anything? All those in favor of everything but 7.1? Cool.
Unfinished business.
Recommendations to approve the attached resolution.
8.2 and 8.3.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. 8.2 and
8.3. Jill.
Jill. Oh, it's Jill.
Yeah. The 2 contracts, one with Larry Farrell, is some staff development for specifically our elementary school teachers in K to 2 and grades 3 and 4. He will be working with teachers on readdressing some of the fluency issues, some math workshop, the format of math workshop, and a couple of other specific areas based on individual building needs. And the other sessions are an individual that we've been working with, Victor Giacarino. He has been working with the district since last year on various levels of the Common Core English Language Arts standards, but this is across all disciplines. So he's not only working with the English teachers, but he's working with the social studies teacher. He's actually just finished up a session last week with Ms. Carnesi, working on some inquiries. So, again, he's more district-wide, and our teachers have really responded to some of the work they're doing.
Unfinished business. Recommendation to approve the attached resolution and reject all bids as per the letter from Mr. Stephen Walsh, BBS Architects, for bid 952, window improvements at POB Middle School, and for bid number 953, window improvements at Jamaica Avenue School, and go out for rebids. Motion? Ginger, Lauren, discussion? Rich, do you want to say anything about it?
No.
We're good? All right. We didn't like the bids, but we're rebidding them. All those in favor? All right. New new business. Right, right. We didn't reject them because they were too low. Course proposal edits. That's everything Jim presented in the second half of his presentation. Is everyone good with that? All those,
so
oh, we need a motion. Wait. Go.
Are we approving these courses now? Is that what we're doing?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So I need a motion. Debbie? Emily? Any further discussions?
Oh, you know what I wanted to do was discuss something that I should have mentioned during routine business was a thank you to SNAP for yet another donation.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Thank you to SNAP for another donation. Awesome. But on the subject of the course proposal edits, all those in favor? Cool. Additional staff development proposals? Seth, Emily, discussion? All those in favor? 11.3, resolution, motion, Debbie, Ginger, discussion? All those in favor? 11.4, nomination for area director. Do we have a motion for a nomination? Ginger.
I nominate Robert Schoen.
Second? Jody? B.A. Schoen, yeah.
Is that his name, Robert?
Robert.
Okay.
Oh, right.
Or B.A. Schoen, yes. Yeah. Who's currently, I believe, BOCES board member,
yes.
Right?
He's a Baldwin board member also.
Jody seconded. That's our discussion, I guess. All those in favor? All right. It is. Good. And Julia, something before we go?
The way this is reading, it's reading course proposal edits under new business, and it should be course proposals and edits
under
new business. So
you'll
I want to make
Jean?
That clear.
Right.
Course proposals and edits.
So you just voted on the edits.
Now we have to vote
on the new course proposal.
Okay, so let's redo it. We have a motion for the course
proposals
and edits.
They're all there.
Debbie? Okay, the new course. Debbie? Emily, all those in favor? Cool, thank you. So I have a motion to go into executive session for matters of personnel. Emily, Ginger, all those in favor? Any last words, Emily?
Yes, go ahead. May the force be with you.
And happy holidays to everybody.
He almost forgot.
What? None of your business. I came for now.
No, she's pretty good. Are you going away?
Yes.
Of course he
after
is. Christmas. Your dad going to go?
Yeah, I'm a little frail.
It's 30 seconds away from a major.